Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be talking about some of the comics we got this month. We'll start with DC, we'll go over to Marvel, and then we'll cover the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll cover general plot points and storylines of the comics we discuss. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to discuss some of the comics we got in May 2024. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I got 55 comics this month. How about you?
56. We're one apart.
Okay, and it was a five-week month, so that's some of it.
Yeah, when I give you my comics, I don't include facsimiles or hardcovers, just FYI.
I don't include hardcovers. I don't include trades. I don't really get the facsimiles, so I would normally probably have included them if I did probably, but again, I get so few of them. I did pre-order one of the upcoming ones.
Okay, cool.
But what I found interesting this time is I've got my system to where it'll tell me what is my change from theoretically what I get every month by publisher and by price. And it's basically I had eight comics, a net of eight, I should say. There's more in play than that. Ending that should, in theory, drop my monthly spending by almost $40.
Wow.
Now, I say that in theory because it's not like comics come out exactly one a month every month.
Yeah. I think I know what's getting cut, too. It's probably a lot of the mutant things.
Actually, a lot of it is just stuff that's wrapping up. And a lot of it is some of the mutant stuff. I had no new ones from Marvel or DC. Three new from the other publishers. Two DC completed, eight Marvel completed, and one new indie title started up.
Yeah. And you want to know what? You're not the first person. It's been said on the Slack channel many times. There's a slow movement by a lot of readers more to indie titles because of the lack of satisfaction with what's coming out of the big two.
Yeah. And what's funny is I still like the characters.
Yeah, me too. I love the characters.
They're just not telling great stories with them.
Yeah. Like I could say, traditionally, Amazing Spider-Man's one of my favorite characters. I love him. You know, he's great. This run of Spider-Man sucks. I mean, there's no way around that. It's just been horrible. I dropped it. And at the same time, you know, Batman, which is a flagship book for DC, I haven't read a really phenomenal run of Batman yet because I started with Tom King.
I've read a couple of really good ones, but it's been a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, the last three writers have just been kind of meh at best and not good at times.
It's a little annoying because I would like to be reading really good stories of the various characters and stuff, but it's getting to where so many of these titles, it's like, yeah, it's not working for me. And it's interesting because I don't think I've got anything tagged this month as I am dropping it at this point. I think there's a couple that I might have marked as dropping in terms of I've already made the decision, but I've still got one or two issues to play out or something like that. Or maybe I just marked them wrong and they should have shown up there. It's hard for me to keep track when I'm doing some of my notes as to how many more issues are coming out and stuff like that. Because I'm marking these as I'm reading them, and those notations are, in terms of the dropping, in theory, an instruction for me when I do my next order form.
No, that makes sense.
It'd make more sense if I actually referred to those notes when I did my order form, sure.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of times that when I go based on memory, and I order a book that I didn't like, and I reordered again just because of that.
Yeah.
Of course, I have it. It sucks when that happens.
Yeah. And there are a couple where it's like, I need to cut the cord on a few of them. It's not that they're bad books. They're just not working for me, and therefore it's time for them to get off my pull list.
I would say the one that I'm still getting, and it's because I like the Green Lantern character so much, is Green Lantern War Journal. I should have canceled that a while back. It's just not good.
Yeah.
And I'm still getting it, believe it or not. And I don't know why.
Inertia.
Yeah, inertia.
If it's there every month, there's nothing to force the decision. If they were to revolume it or retitle it, that would probably be enough for you to say, you know what, now's a good time to get off.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know how that goes. Well, shall we dive into DC?
Yeah, let's do that. I got my list filtered where I only have 12 DC at this moment.
I had 13.
Ah, one apart again. Hey, there you go.
And two of them were one-shots, two completed, another one I'm going to drop.
Yeah, I think I know the two that completed, Alan Scott, Green Lantern, and probably Justice League, Godzilla vs. Kong.
You got it, yeah.
Yeah, because I had those and they finished on mine.
Now, I am counting as one-shots, both true one-shots, such as that Superman House of Brainiac special,
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I'm also counting things like annuals.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to Marvel in a few months, miniseries disguised in one-shots, like some of their annuals are forming a de facto story arc, but they're essentially one-offs.
Okay.
And same with some of the upcoming Absolute Power stuff.
Yeah. And a complete aside with Action Comics, what I've noticed from the solicits is they're giving random writers like two, three, four issues, and then handing it off, here's the baton, completely different writing creative group.
Yep.
And they're just running. It's so weird because I was buying it and I did enjoy this, but now I'm like, I'm going to drop it again because I don't like the next creative team. Very weird. I don't know why they're doing that.
Either they can't get somebody to take it full time, they don't have somebody they like well enough to give it to them full time, or something else is going on. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just bizarre because that's the longest running title at DC, which is just insane.
Depending how you count it, it's the longest running title, period.
Yeah.
But even that, you've got to do a little bit of forgiveness for the Action Comics weekly run for about a year that ran weekly and increased the count for a bit. And I do think there have been a few times where Action has not come out, such as during Flashpoint, Convergence, and maybe one or two other times.
Yeah, that's true.
And again, they've revolumed it a few times and just gone back to the legacy numbering. But for all intents and purposes, it's essentially been going pretty much nonstop since it started. I don't think it's ever missed a full quarter yet.
Ah, yeah, that's crazy that nobody would want to take it. Or let them figure it out, but right now I am not here for them to figure it out.
Can understand that. They're treating it as something of an anthology title in terms of rotating feature over time. Obviously, the main feature is Superman, usually most months, but they've also got the backup stuff going on.
Exactly. So what's your first pick?
My first pick is the Nightwing annual.
Oh, okay. What'd you think of that? Because I skipped the annual, believe it or not.
Really?
Or I didn't get it. I don't know if I skipped it, but I didn't get it.
Okay. You remember the girlfriend that Rick Grayson had?
Yes.
The Pirate Queen now?
Yes.
We get her backstory.
Oh, okay. Cool. Was it nice? Did it work?
Overall, I liked it. We found out what her real name was, how she hooks into the whole pirate thing, why she was there, and how she got to know Rick Grayson when Dick Grayson had been shot in the head and forgot who the hell he was. There were a few parts where her life seems to orbit around Dick Grayson's substantially over time, almost, I don't want to say ludicrously so, but more than I think sheer chance would allow for. But I'd have to actually go reread a couple of past arcs to see how much of this actually had happened back in the day, and how much of this is just kind of retconning and fitting her in to have her orbit Grayson's area so much.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I do like that character. I did like her as the pirate queen, or whatever you want to call her, the pirate captain in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Will she stick around when the next writing team takes over? I don't know. You know, that's the kind of thing where it's like, she's a cool character. I don't know if we'll see a lot of her when this creative team moves on.
Given this was written by a different writer.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm not sure if it's going to be the next writer for Nightwing or not. I'm kind of guessing it will be. This ended on a moment that implies there's more to the story to be had.
Ah, so maybe that's what they're going to pick up and run with.
That's what I'm thinking.
All right.
If you like the character, and it sounds like you do, I think this is worth picking up.
Okay.
Honestly, I probably would have stopped the story about a panel and a shadow earlier, right before that tease of there's more to be had, just because it gave a really good backstory for her, and it was otherwise a fairly good, complete story.
Okay, all right. But the tease of something else at the end.
And it's not an Achilles heel or ruin the story or anything, but it makes it feel like this is all set up for something versus payoff for her having been a supporting cast member of Nightwing's title for quite some time.
Very cool. Now it makes me wonder if I misput that issue, if I forgot to order the issue. I'm going to message Eric shortly after we finish recording.
Yeah, again, I enjoyed it and I thought it was good.
All right, cool.
So what's your first one?
For my first one, I'm going to be a broken record. It's the last time I can call it out. Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, number 7, the final issue. And I will just say this series, I've said it a lot, it's a ton of fun. You know, you start off with like the bad guys winning, the bad kaiju, and the Justice League kind of fighting back. And I even loved how Kong gets his moment in the spotlight when I love the interaction between Kong and the Green Lanterns and how that all played out.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the flip of Godzilla in there, you know, like being in opposition to being on the side of the good guys. And it felt like everything was true to the characters. It almost felt like it could be a movie. And so I thought it was a ton of fun. They stuck the ending. And if you just want to have a fun throwaway story that you'll understand without having to really understand too much, pick this up and trade because it's terrific.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I felt the ending was a bit rushed.
It was.
I think while the Kong Green Lantern stuff was fun, it was actually undercut by another thing that I thought was fun with one of the Titans.
Ah, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I thought the whole bit they did with the Green Lantern stuff hinged on a decision they made with one of those characters that I felt they didn't have to make, and they could have, because that was something that, to me, put this very clearly in, it is not in the main DCU.
It's definitely not, no.
It cannot be because of one of the things they did. And they didn't have to do that to go where they wanted to go.
Yeah, I agree, and I know what you're talking about, because they kind of broke it for the main DCU, or DC Universe, by doing that. But overall, though, it was a fun read.
It was a fun read. It just felt like in this issue, Superman just kind of zipped around and fixed a lot of stuff at the end.
Exactly. He was the clean it up guy, cleaning up messes all over.
If it was Superman versus Kong versus Godzilla or something like that, sure. But, I mean, let the Justice League do something. I mean,
they were kind of like just in the background for a lot of it and come in to assist at times.
I don't think the ending was as good as it could have been, but I also don't think it ruined the story by any stretch of the imagination. I just was hoping it was going to be stronger than it was, and I think the entire run was a lot of fun, and I don't know that they would do it necessarily as a full-blown live-action kind of a movie, but there's no reason they couldn't, other than getting the rights to Godzilla and Kong, of course, there's no reason they couldn't do this as a really good animated feature.
This seems like something silly, I don't want to say silly, but big and bombastic and summer-type movie type thing that, hey, DC, and Marvel, the superhero movies are kind of down right now. You know, they've been overproduced and kind of strip mined. This would be something where you could reintroduce them and have some fun with it.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff, definitely.
Yeah. All right, what's your next pick?
I'm going to go with Green Arrow number 12.
Oh, I really like that.
I thought it was a really good ending to this arc.
Yes.
It really played into the family and all that stuff they've been building up. Both this arc and in the original one. If I'd have to pick between the two arcs, I'd say the first one actually was a little better, but this was good. I'm a little cautiously optimistic, maybe is the right way to put it, about where they go from here with the absolute power stuff.
Yeah.
Because I kind of, they've telegraphed the role Green Arrow's probably going to play in there, and I'm not too crazy about it.
Understandable.
But I think Joshua Williamson's been doing some good stuff here. The art fits the book, not exactly the style I love, but we're also switching artists for the next arc. So, it just feels like this was supposed to be a couple of different miniseries that they decided to try as an ongoing.
That's how I felt. It felt like issue 6 ended the first mini, and then This was another mini, but they kind of sandwiched them together. But I've been having more fun with it than I have with a lot of DC series, so I'm okay with them just keeping it ongoing. As long as they can keep the quality level like this, it's been one of the more enjoyable reads.
I kind of prefer them keeping it going than stopping it and just flipping it to a new number one every 6 issues.
Me too.
So yeah, it's a ton of fun, and it's got more of the feel I want out of other books than I'm getting out of most DC books.
Yeah, I would say that too. Written well, ton of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Over to me?
Yeah.
All right. Man, the other ones are kind of like, they're good, but they're kind of closely lumped together as what I would give them in scores. And so I'm like, which one do I want to pick? I'm going to go with, let's go with Action Comics 1065. Did you get that?
I did.
Okay. This was a action-focused issue, you know, no pun intended. It was a ton on Lobo and Superman. So this is a whole Lobo-Superman issue. And I felt like even though the plot didn't really progress really far in the comic, other than the action that's going on, Lobo's being set up to make a choice near the end of the book, and it seems like we instinctively, you kind of can guess how you know it'll play out, but they could totally take a U-turn on it, you know? And I feel like it was just a lot of fun with two characters that we don't see together a ton, or at least I haven't seen together a ton. I haven't read a ton of Lobo, and it was fun. I like this whole concept of what they have going on here. I don't want to ruin it too much.
I certainly think it was some fun stuff with those two and showing some of the parallels between them. And it's all set up for the fight between them in Superman 14 that also came out this month.
Exactly. It ties right into that. Yeah, that's the other one I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can talk about it too, because they do. They're one right into the other.
Well, I'll be honest. I thought the fight between the two of them in Superman 14 was lackluster.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the action, I didn't think.
Yeah. And with Action Comics, what I found kind of interesting is they start on Hardcore Station and how it used to be a big deal. And I'm like, you know, we never saw enough of Hardcore Station for it to ever have been considered a big deal in the grand scheme of things. But okay, fine. In-universe it is, have at it. I really thought the main part of the story that I liked was Supergirl and Superboy escaping captivity in Brainiac's ship and their kind of adventure and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we get this one bottled city something's going to happen with, and it does. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And I would say this was one of the more, for me, interesting backups. But part of it is also the timing. I've been doing the Legion Spotlight. Because of that and this, I've been thinking I really need to dig up some of the key issues and stuff for Brainiac and how that does and often doesn't impact Brainiac 5.
Yeah.
In this backup, we get Vrildrox, Brainiac 2, and his family. And here they basically say Vril was created by Brainiac from his own DNA, and sounds like there was some other experimenting going on. We get Leral Dox, Brainiac 3 for all intents and purposes, which is Vril's son that he had over with Stealth in the Legion with the Dots series way back when. We get mention of Indigo, which was a member of the Outsiders, and is also Brainiac 8. She was from the future, sent back to kill Donna Troy, and had two personalities, and plot device, plot device, plot device, etc., etc. So just writing that back up, we get, okay, here's quite a bit of the Brainiac family tree and stuff. And given some of the other stuff they're doing with Brainiac in the main story, it's kind of interesting. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. Whereas the backup over in Superman, of course, was, you know, another kind of pointless thing. I forget if it was...
Yeah.
Was that the... I guess it was Wonder Woman that had the pointless one with Trinity and the future Superman Batman. This would have been the pointless... No, it was... What was the pointless one in this one? Because the Green Lantern one had the guy in Lobo and it taking a sharp left turn because I think they realized it wasn't tying into this. And the fact that Action Comics had a good backup...
It made this one outshine Superman.
Made it stand out. Well, and also the fight between Superman and Lobo in Superman 14, lackluster. It should have been better.
It was lackluster. And one question, just because I don't know a lot about Lobo, he's supposed to be the only survivor of the Zarnian race or whatever the heck they're called.
He was, but they danced around that pretty well in these issues of, well, Brainiac's collected cities from all over.
Yeah, so I didn't know how that played for you. You liked it?
I didn't have any objection to it. Is it a retcon? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Did they do it well and did it make sense? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I didn't know for sure. I was like, huh, okay, but it worked, but then it played out to where ultimately it didn't matter. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Without ruining things for people who haven't read these yet.
The House of Brainiac stuff is working better for me than I had feared it might.
Yeah, I would say so too. The House of Brainiac I thought was a pretty decent story, and I read it and I don't regret reading it.
Did you pick up the Superman House of Brainiac special?
Yes, I did.
I was curious if you'd read it. Let's go ahead and talk about it real quick. It's funny because they mentioned the whole Council of Light of having been a mystery since Dark Crisis number 7.
Yeah.
Dark Crisis came out in December of 2022. And I'm like, have we even seen much of this Council of Light since then?
Not really.
Or is it just a dangling plot line they picked up for this and kind of use it to hand wave, well, this is how Amanda Waller got home from Earth 3.
Yeah, it feels like something, someone just remembered, oh yeah, here's this thing over here. What did we do with that? Oh, I'll do something with it here.
And what they did with it was actually, it made no sense as a Council of Light, but it was kind of cool nonetheless.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you there.
So I thought the characters they're bringing in with that, I'm curious how it all plays out. I'm not going to say this was a terrific issue. It was decent, not great, not horrible.
Yeah.
If it didn't have the reveal of the Council of Light and... frankly, it could have and should have been, although some under name, I don't know if it would have worked as well for me, because it was another anthology, and a few of the stories, it's like, this is pointless.
Yes, yeah, some of them I enjoyed, some I did not.
Yeah, it's a true anthology in this, and
yeah,
you know, $5.99 cover price, my tolerance of such anthologies is not what it once was.
Yeah, for $6, and you're, let's say you like half of them, you feel a little bit jaded at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so what is going to be your next pick?
All right, I am going to go with one that I'm not saying is a good issue. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say flat out, it probably isn't a good issue.
All right.
Beautifully drawn.
Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman.
It's funny you said that. As soon as you said beautifully drawn, that's literally my notes. Hey, at least the art's really good.
My comment on the main story is that I got bored a page or two before the background artist apparently did. Because there's one page where it's like, yep, no background.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, this is both a writer, Tom King, and I don't know who the editor is off the top of my head, that don't understand continuity and how you've got to think about what you're adding to continuity.
Yeah.
Because apparently Wonder Woman's being held captive in isolation for months. And I'm like, really? That seems unlikely. Like, insanely unlikely. Wouldn't Batman, Superman, or like the fleet of Wonder Girls we've got, one, gone looking for her, two, found her, and three, rescued her in months?
Yep, they just leave her there. We don't care.
And add to the fact that this issue, the previous issue, and the one before that have all effectively done nothing to move the story forward.
No, it felt like the pacing is almost like that Nightmares with Batman, where he's just doing stuff, but there's no progression and no quote-unquote story there. I'm like, what are we doing?
All right. Wonder Woman has been captive of the Sovereign in this issue and in issue, was it 7 or 8? One of them was the let's go shopping for a gift for Batman.
Yep.
So 3 issues in a row that
nothing
happens out of 9 issues of the series.
That's a third.
Yeah.
And it's kind of damning because what we've talked about numerous times is I get this book and it's just drop dead gorgeous. Your jaw drops. You're like, this is beautiful. And I feel like it's such wasted talent on the art side for a guy who doesn't seem interested in writing a story or moving a story or is taking that position that we talked about on the Slack channel where he just tries to trigger people at times. And I don't get it.
I really wonder in cases like this where they've got a really amazing talent on the art, in my opinion, being wasted on a meaningless story that doesn't have good payoff per issue, what the artist is thinking when they get the script every month.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for him. Yeah.
I mean, I've got to imagine that Daniel Semperi is thinking, well, it's a paycheck and I'll do the best I can with it, which I don't know what he's really thinking, but I would applaud him if that's his attitude. But I've got to imagine that's very different than, say, Bruno Redondo when he's getting one of the latest issues of Nightwing to go draw from Tom Taylor.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that plot line with Heartless has been going on for eons, and that's a separate issue, but it's at least a good story.
Yeah, and there's action set pieces where he's jumping off a building or they're sailing on a pirate ship, the different locales. And in here, you're lacking all of that. There was action at the very beginning of Wonder Woman, and then everything came to a screeching halt.
Well, the last 3 issues have essentially been talking heads.
Yeah.
It's just a question of, is it in somebody's imagination? Is it her being held captive? Or is it in a mall, intergalactic space mall kind of a deal?
Yeah.
You know, they're walking around, but it's still people talking, and that's it.
Yeah, it's become a little bit silly, and I'm still getting it, and I, at the same time, I didn't enjoy it, but I love the art here.
I'm just wondering if this story is ever going to wrap up, or maybe just at least move forward, because we're going to hit the point where it's got to get derailed by the absolute power stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah, it will. So, we shall see.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the art, I wouldn't be seeing, but I like the art, so it's getting more leeway than the story deserves.
Yeah. So, over to me?
Yeah.
All right, my final pick. You said something, so I'm going to change what my pick was going to be. I like Batman Dark Ages. It's the only Batman I'm getting. But I'm going to switch it to a Nightwing that I do want to talk about, Nightwing 114, which I did get.
Okay.
And I'm going to mention it because it's the final arc of the Tom Taylor, Bruno Redondo run,
mm-hmm.
which is a bit sad. I mean, because I really enjoy this creative team. They've been fantastic. But at the same time, you know, the art was great. It had that charm that they had early on because Bitewing the dog is back, which I loved. They're hiking, you know, in the mountains. You got Dick in there. It just was, it felt like, oh, charm. But then they finally get down to the nuts and bolts. He's like, in this last start, we got to deal with Heartless. So we start getting a lot of momentum with that Heartless arc, the thing that's happening there. And I think we're finally going to get some answers and some movement and maybe some resolution with this, because he was the guy who set this up. So I'm kind of excited to see the end story.
I'm totally excited to see the end story, but I've got, at this point, I don't say a love-hate relationship with this title.
Yes.
But it's a love frustration at the very least. Because again, we're finally getting what it seems like is going to be the, I don't say the finale, but the payoff of the Heartless saga that started back in what number?
It was a long time ago.
79, maybe?
Good Lord, it's been that long.
I don't know. It's been ages.
Yeah, it's been a lot of issues. So almost 40 issues back. That's crazy.
Thereabouts. And these guys, when they've paired up and they've done beautiful work, both writing, story, etc., they've had a couple of gimmick issues, but they were well-done gimmick issues, so I'm okay with the single panel one and some stuff like that.
Yep.
I think Tom Taylor specifically has lost sight of the monthly cadence of comics.
I agree.
Because not only is it too long since when they set up Heartless to what they're paying off, but in the meanwhile, they've set up the Pirate Queen, somebody else did something with in the annual this month. They set up Nightwing's half-sister that has barely shown up since. You know, they've done other things like that. The Titans are a big thing in the book, and then they're not. And here, the opening scene takes place somewhere in the mountains, but the majority of the issue is taking place 2 weeks prior.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not a fan of that storytelling style, and by the time we loop back to him being in the mountains, now maybe we'll get him walking a little further every issue, or maybe we won't get back to it until the final issue. I don't know, but it's like, it doesn't read as well on a monthly basis. I'm sure people who years from now pick up the collection and trade and go through them in short order, they're going to have a very different reading experience and probably a better reading experience.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. It's a different reading experience. And, you know, you and I, we've talked about this before offline when we're not recording. It would be nice if we could stack up and read a trade, you know, read 5 or 6 or 10 issues at a time. But because of the monthly comic spotlight, we got to read the comics this month, you know? Or when it was weekly, we got to read them this week.
Some of it's that. Some of it, though, is you can't just, I think, stack up certain titles, read them at one time and other titles at another time in a shared universe.
Correct.
Because then you would get the Green Arrow stuff tying into Absolute Power before you've maybe read the House of Brainiac that leads into the Absolute Power stuff, and you lose the cross continuity at that point, even if the title might read better.
Yeah, we read the world as it's delivered to us, and the way that Marvel and DC tells us this is how it should be read, and for good or bad, but there is a lost art to the monthly comic, because like you're saying, this is a fantastic creative team, but because of the I don't want to say delays, but his meanderings and his writing.
I think it was some of the decisions Tom Taylor intentionally made.
Yeah, we're not going to get follow-up on that sister, and that was a terrific arc, or that's a terrific reveal. That I want, and now we're going to have to depend on someone else to maybe do something with it that he could have done something brilliantly with.
And who knows, maybe she shows up and ties in into this arc or something like that and we get some payoff, but we're getting payoff on stuff that's been dragging on for too long.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. So it's like a love-hate is the perfect way to describe it.
Love frustration. I don't hate the book at all, but I do get frustrated with how long it takes to get some of the payoff on some of these things.
I agree. And when they print this in a hardcover, I'm going to pick it up again, because I'm sure it'll read better altogether.
Almost certainly it has to.
Yeah, I agree.
Shall we move over to Marvel?
Yeah, I filter my list, and I have 25 from Marvel. How about you?
I have 24.
We're one off on everything. That's insane. Wow.
What do you want to start with?
Okay, I'll start us off here. Okay, my favorite one. Man, I'll do that later. Okay, I'm going to start off with Avengers, because I know you read that.
Okay.
Avengers 14. This issue, it worked for me as well as the DC books did. With this is tying into Blood Hunt. So I'm going to mention Avengers, but I'm going to reference it in regards to Blood Hunt. Did you read Avengers 14 or did you drop off because of the event?
I read Avengers 14 and I have not read Blood Hunt.
Okay.
Have you read Blood Hunt?
I did. I got Blood Hunt 1 and 2. I bought the main title.
Let me tell you what I thought not having read Blood Hunt.
Okay, you go first.
I had no idea what was going on in the grand scheme of the Blood Hunt storyline and don't really care.
Okay.
This made enough sense as an Avengers fight and outbreak of vampires story that I was satisfied. It felt like a fairly random selection of Avengers, but it's like, yeah, that's okay. And honestly, it was a better issue than I had expected. Not brilliant, but I wasn't expecting it to be that. And given I didn't know or care what was going on in Blood Hunt, this actually was surprisingly good for me.
That is awesome. Okay, this worked for me like House of Brainiac worked. What's weird is House of Brainiac, I just read those things. I didn't read anything that kind of went off into the abyss. And the same thing with Blood Hunt. I read the main thing, and I only picked up the titles that I was reading. This little event that they have going on, Blood Hunt, I do not know how they made the leader of the bad guys the leader of the bad guys because I'm reading that title.
That one kind of surprised me when I was reading another title, and it got brought up there, and I'm like, really? That makes no sense, but okay.
Well, and I was reading that title, and that title did not show that or telegraph it or allude to it at all. So this needs to be explained, and it has not. So all that being said, I'm sure they're going to explain it to us, but it has worked, and it's been a ton of fun. And I was surprised that I enjoyed this as much as I did. I'm like, okay, turn off your thinking cap. There's a dark hold, and we're blacking out the sun with this evil book. Vampires are running amok. Heroes versus vampires. If you get bit, you can be turned. But it is working. It is fun. It is an event that doesn't seem too deep, and it's not going to change the whole Marvel universe, I don't think. But it's enjoyable for what it is. I was just like, it made me feel like I was 18 years old again reading comics versus a 50-year-old reading them.
Well, I mean, substitute zombies for vampires, and they're essentially doing the Walking Dead era of the Marvel universe for a moment.
Oh, yeah. That's totally how this felt. And it was done well. And I think this is the model I'm taking going forward with events. I'm going to pick up the main thing. I'm not doing the side stories. I'm just not in it for the $100. I'm in it for the 20 to 25 for the main four or five issues.
Again, I'm not getting the main story. I'm just getting the titles I was getting otherwise. And I had two of them that tied in this time, Avengers and Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Doctor Strange. Did that work for you too?
That was one that I thought was an interesting issue. And I thought the stakes seemed to ramp up really fast in that issue.
Yes.
Because again, it's reliant on the Blood Hunt stuff, whatever. And they had a reveal or two of, you know, who's behind, what's really going on, and that kind of a thing. And I was able to follow this issue no problem whatsoever, because it's Doctor Strange's adventure during Blood Hunt, not Chapter 14 of Blood Hunt.
And that makes a big difference.
Huge difference.
I was so impressed. That's what I was going to mention about Avengers 14, and yeah, Doctor Strange as well. I felt like when I was reading them that they could have been read on their own, and I'm happy to hear you say that. Because that is the thing that's been damning about events, is that people get frustrated when they pour into their current book and you're not able to enjoy it and you feel like you're pulling your hair out. Oh, well, I'm just going to skip buying it, I guess. And this did not take that turn. This actually became a fun little one-off story you understood, or one or two issue story, and you understood it.
Yeah, there have been some events that literally Shanghai the title out from under the plot line it had. Avengers during Civil War is a great example of that. For about a 9-month stretch, it was just a bunch of one-off stories that related heavily to, I think it was Civil War, yeah. No, it was Secret Invasion I'm thinking of. Secret Invasion, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, they've Shanghai'd the title for that. It's all good stuff, but it's not the Avenger title I'd been reading.
Yeah.
Whereas here, this totally went in a different direction than where they had gone last issue, but that was a second part of a two-part story. It was time for a new adventure. This just happened to be a things have hit the fan rather quickly sort of adventure.
Very cool. So literally, I was going with my first pick, and we talked about Avengers, Blood Hunt 1 and 2, and Doctor Strange.
Yeah, and Avengers. Yeah.
That's insane how it all played out. So that's my first pick, those four comics.
Top that.
Yeah. Now it's up to you. How can you do 4-1?
4-1, if I had to.
Or does that count as one of yours? I don't know.
No. I've got one I'll go with.
Okay, what do you got?
I'm going to go actually with Wolverine, both 49 and 50.
Oh, okay. I like 50 more than 49.
49 wasn't really Wolverine. It was Sabretooth reliving him, torturing others, but from their perspective.
Yes.
Wolverine had a cameo, but didn't really do anything.
Exactly.
And the previous issue had built up, he's got this adamantium armor, and then he uses it in 50, and I'm like, you know, that armor really didn't last that long or do that much, so... Because weren't you saying last month that it was marked as a key issue because of that armor, 48?
Yeah, so many times I add things into CLZ, and they're like, key issue. I was like, key, and I was like, oh, that kind of spoiled it, but okay, whatever. But yeah, I'm like, and it didn't last very long. All right.
It can't spoil anything in so much as they don't know what the hell they're talking about, because they don't have any insider information. It's still presumptive of them to do that. And yes, it does spoil things because it's going to be a big deal.
Yep.
And then there was the line of dialogue that it's like, oh yeah, this has been a problem for a bit, but it's now no longer a problem. You know, wavy hands, poof, that's taken care of.
Yep.
Given how they started, if this was going to be the bloodiest, most violent story ever told with Wolverine, I was really surprised how relatively unbloody the story was, particularly when Sabretooth was getting cut to pieces.
Yeah.
And then they also pulled the plug on one character, and I'm like, oh, that's a shame. I don't know why they did that, but okay. And then we got not one, but two pointless backup stories.
Mm-hmm.
One with a Sentinel, another with no dialogue or plot that I could find to it.
Yeah, that was a little bit disappointing, those backup stories. I was just like, this isn't good.
Particularly since this was $7.99 cover price.
Yeah, it was expensive and not worth it, I felt like. But at the same time, it's the end of Wolverine, and they do have another Wolverine solicited, I think.
They do. Well, they had it on the order form. They didn't have it in the last solicitation, but in the June solicitation. But the July solicitations will have it, even though it was ordered with June.
Yeah, which is insane. I have to go through the order form and find things that aren't on the catalog.
What I recommend doing, and I've been making a point of pointing out these edge cases of they're putting it for order before they've solicited it. If you wait until the order form is due, because right now, as we're recording this on June 25th. I just set my order in today. It's not due to Eric over at Cowabunga Deep Discount Comics until Thursday the 27th. So obviously before this episode goes up. But as I am sitting here today, I already have the downloads of the next catalog so I can see the solicit.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did that for Wolverine. I did that for Exceptional X-Men.
Yeah, that was the other one, Exceptional X-Men. And I can't remember if I ordered that one or not, but I did order Wolverine.
I ordered Exceptional. I did not order Wolverine.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm a Wolverine mark, so even though that we haven't had any good Wolverine lately, the last few runs have kind of stunk.
Have you been reading... You haven't been reading Weapon X, have you?
No, I have not.
This is the team of Wolverines?
Oh, yeah. I passed that based on the creative team, I think. How was it? Was it good, bad?
We got the final two issues. I felt the final one was anticlimactic, a little rushed, and just they're stopping the story, not so much ending it. The previous one... I mean, they paused at the beginning to give the origin of one of the Wolverines. And I'm like, yeah, they had to do that a few too many times in this series. And it's at the point where I really just need to stop getting these miniseries that are featuring a multiversal team of the same characters.
Yeah.
They're rarely great. Hell, they're rarely good.
Very true. Yeah, they usually are lackluster, to say the least.
That was one of two things that made me decide not to get Spider Society. The other is, while the cover looked amazing, the interior art, I don't even know if they showed it to us.
So, over to me for one?
Yeah.
Okay, this one I know you didn't get, so you're not going to have a lot of feedback on this. But I want to tell you, this was a fantastic issue. We had Get Fury number one, and it's Garth Ennis at Garth Ennis's best. So, the book is alluding to Frank Castle in there, mm-hmm. and name, well, not naming him at one point. But later on, yeah, it's going to be Frank Castle. But it's about a surly recon marine group facing off against MPs trying to confiscate and kill dogs because of rabies. This is all taking place in a base in Vietnam. You know, the forced recon marines versus the MPs who are sent there to kill the dogs. And they're just facing off. You're not touching our dogs. That's the whole setup, the beginning. And it's a nice showdown. And there's some foreshadowing that happens in the interaction and how it plays out. And then you fast forward to Frank, the character, Frank Castle, talking with CIA agents, and they're divulging to him that Fury has been captured by the Viet Cong or the NVA. They're not sure which one it is, and he has a lot of secrets, and they're taking him on the Hanoi Highway all the way up to Hanoi, and we cannot risk his secrets getting out. Kill him. The CIA wants to kill Nick Fury. So it's a Max book, and it's worthy of that. It's a Vietnam War era Punisher Nick Fury book, and it's not just cursing, it's just, I'll just say, it's worthy of the Max title, and it has some disturbing moments in all the right ways for me, and Frank Castle being Frank Castle, I don't want to just kill this guy who served his country. I think I can save him. So is Frank Castle going to follow orders and take him out, or is he going to save him? That's kind of the setup.
Cool.
It really worked for me. I think people who are fans of Vietnam War fans of like a little rougher and edgier war book, this is something that's been missing in that genre. And it's Garth Ennis writing his Max Punisher type stuff. You're going to love it.
Cool. Not for me, but cool.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely like in my wheelhouse, not in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what's your next one?
I'm going to go with Fantastic Four number 20.
All right. I'd mark that one to talk about if you didn't pick it. Or all right.
I definitely want to talk about this because I have made the decision to drop the title.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Now, just to give a little context to that comment, I grew up as a DC reader.
Yeah.
I'd been watching Super Friends. I knew of Batman, Superman from all their cartoons and so forth. So that's what I gravitated towards, the spinner rack and stuff like that. The first Marvel books I was getting off the rack on a regular basis were Fantastic Four and Alpha Flight. Both were John Byrne titles. I later branched out to the Marvel Universe. So I've been reading the Fantastic Four longer than I've been reading basically any Marvel title.
Yeah, wow.
This was a fun, but ultimately pointless issue.
Yes.
There was no sci-fi wackiness because the plot seemed to be out of a generic sitcom with Ben and Johnny competing to be the best grocery store cashier they could be. Better than the other one, at least.
Yep.
The rest of the FF make a cameo in this issue, and I'm like, this isn't great. It's not the Fantastic Four. It's certainly not like the Dan Slott Fantastic Four.
Which was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. And if when Ryan North gets off the book, if Dan Slott comes back on, that would be enough to get me back on the title.
Yeah.
But if it's a solicit that's, it's not going to be enough.
I had a feeling you're going to say that because I marked this one as something we should talk about. Because when I was putting my notes down, I said, my notes were like, this book has become weird. I think Ryan North has run out of ideas. He keeps focusing on anything but the four. He'll focus on these two, this one, some hijinks, but he doesn't want to write a Fantastic Four story, and he does it for yucks, and look at this cool thing over here, and this is one that I'm just like, it's getting a little long in the tooth, and I was feeling that too. Maybe it's time to cut loose at the next arc.
Well, he's not writing, to your point, the Fantastic Four.
He's not.
He's doing half of it, but usually it's a, here's a wacky sci-fi thing, and let's run with that. It almost reads more like a, I was going to say, like a bad Doctor Who thing at times.
It's almost like a comic strip. You read it for the week and there's no continuity between the stories, it feels like.
Oh, yeah. They're done in one and all the wrong ways.
Yeah, in the wrong way.
And part of it is the next two issues are Blood Hunt tie-ins, so I was a little, I don't know about this. But the two that were solicited after that, One is another sci-fi wacky story as narrated by Johnny.
Oh, God.
Followed by another sci-fi wacky story narrated by Reed. And I'm like, this is falling into the formula that's not working for me.
Yeah. I think Ryan North, his sweet spot is Squirrel Girl. That's where he did his best work, I think.
What's funny about that is Squirrel Girl, if you read the title, and you may or may not have, not only dealt with her, but her best friend and like two or three others, they routinely had at least four or five main characters.
Yeah, he wrote that title better than he did the Fantastic Four, I feel like. And I did read it.
You wrote that as more of a team title than this.
Which is insane. Yeah. It's weird. It's like he doesn't want to write the four, and I don't understand why.
Doesn't want to, isn't able to, I don't know, I don't care. And I got nothing against Ryan. He's not a bad writer. Probably a fine person as well. But his take on the Fantastic Four isn't working for me. And it's such a shame after the recent Dan Slott run that was just knocking it out of the park 6 ways to Sunday.
Yeah. To your point, I'm not a fan of Squirrel Girl, but he wrote it pretty well. He made it enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that means he is a good writer.
He can be a good writer.
Yeah. On Fantastic Four, he is definitely not being a good writer.
For me, he's not a good writer.
Yes.
Or he's not a writer I would like to see stay on the Fantastic Four. I try not to use good, bad as declarative terms like that.
He doesn't work for me. That's a better way of saying it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm too judgmental. My wife told me that today.
It's one thing to be judgmental. It's another thing on how you're being judgmental.
That's true.
Judging what works for you is perfectly fair.
Yes.
Judging it as an empirical good, bad, whatever, not so much.
Exactly. I shouldn't say he's a good or bad writer. He's not working for me on Fantastic Four.
I'm sure there are other people that are loving this run of Fantastic Four, and I envy them that. I wish I were. I'm just not.
Yeah. Hey, I'm there with you, man.
Yeah.
All right. Over to me.
Yeah.
Okay. I will talk about Avengers Twilight. We got the last Avengers Twilight, and I will wait to see what you say, but I think Zdarsky stuck the landing on this. He had been on a downward trend, Chip Zdarsky, since he left Daredevil. He did a really good job on Daredevil. He went to Batman. It was not good. And then I was kind of worried about him. And then he wrote this mini, and I feel like he's back to finding his magic again. So you get a fun little story. You get some Janet Van Dyne on display helping, you know, in a battle that's going on here. James Stark makes peace with Dad and redeems himself a little bit. And I love the Thor-Hulk altercation that happened in the book. And I like that there were real repercussions to the battle, but it left you with a happy feeling too, even though there were repercussions about the way things played out with Tony and everything like that. But I feel like this is going to be a really good read for people who want to pick up, once again, a trade. If I was pointing to someone, hey, you may enjoy this trade, this is something I would point them to. Hey, this was a really good story. 6 issues and you're done.
I would agree with that. I thought it was a good end of the story. It left the door open for different adventures afterwards in that reality.
It did.
But it closed the loops from this one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I ask for, yeah.
Yeah, there's enough of a window where we can revisit this world from time to time if they want to, but if they never did, I feel satisfied.
You know what I would do for a sequel to this?
What is that?
I would do Avengers Twilight of the Gods.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Well, I haven't told you the idea yet.
I'm thinking Hercules and I'm thinking Thor.
Nope. Well, Thor would definitely play in.
Okay, well, who are the gods you're thinking of?
It starts with, and this is going to be spoilery, so if you haven't read the ending of Avengers Twilight, I'm about to spoil it, sorry.
Oh, okay, all right, it's happening.
Hulk and Iron Man would be the two leads.
Okay.
Because they die here and they're in Valhalla with the Norse gods.
Yes.
They get bored. They're already dead, they got nothing to lose. They start running amok, causing problems. And this is where you realize, you know, maybe regular humans or even superhumans are not meant to have the eternal afterlife.
That'd be funny.
So they're up there just causing all sorts of havoc and whatnot. Thor must come to Earth to kill Captain America.
Oh.
So he can go up there and make the peace.
That would be hilarious.
I think it would be the complete opposite that anyone would be expecting. Could flop entirely because of that, but it could be fun.
That would be a fun story, though. That would be terrific. And you did spoil it, but didn't that leave you with a good feeling too, even though there were some deaths?
Yeah, because they get the happy ending even with the death. And some of it was, they have to die the hero.
Exactly. It's almost like the equivalency of heaven here on Earth is you have Valhalla, which I was like, yes. You know, it just made you feel good. You felt satisfied when you read it. I was like, yeah. Versus like, hey, let's recycle. How can we bring him back to life? And so that's why I was like, yeah, I could revisit this. And that was cool. Stuck the landing hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if they were to do a sequel, they would probably do that generation of Avengers we end on.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. I had a good time with this.
Yeah.
By the way, this is just a shout out to Marvin Daniels. I had to talk about Avengers Twilight and Blood Hunt and all that stuff, but my other pick, if I would have gotten one, would have been, and I had to do Get Fury because it was great, Immortal Thor. That was in that fourth spot because Immortal Thor, he has been talking about it and enjoying it. I've been enjoying the heck out of it. So I'm right there with you, Marvin, Viking Joker. It's a great story.
Cool. Quick question before we move on to the others.
Yeah, what's up?
Did you read Doom?
I did read Doom. What did you think of it? I have thoughts on it.
I have thoughts on it, too. They're not really well-formed because I didn't think the story was really well-formed.
It was weird, wasn't it?
It was not what I was expecting at all.
Me neither.
Art was a bit scratchy for my tastes.
Yes.
Didn't really land the ending for me.
Nope.
But we really had Doom, Valeria, and Galactus as the only real characters in the entire story. I mean, there were a few others, but they were plot devices.
Yeah, it was bizarre the way this whole story played out. And my thoughts at the end is, what are we doing? And I'm a little bit confused with what's going on.
This was by Jonathan Hickman.
I know. That's why I was like surprised. I was like, it wasn't bad. It was weird.
I was expecting something to be a little bit more near future.
Yes.
With Doom having to go save something, and maybe I read more into the solicit than I should have, but my implication was he was going to wind up back in the present day knowing of a future Doom to the reality that he couldn't stop alone and he needed to gain allies or something like that. I thought it was going to build to something. It did not.
It didn't build to anything, which honestly, it disappointed me. Hickman's one of my, I don't want to say he's 100%, but he's one of the better writers who hits most of the time. And I would say, although it was written well, constructed well, the ending just baffled me. And I was just like, it was definitely not one of his books I'd point to.
I would point to it if I had somebody who claimed Hickman could do no wrong.
Yeah, this is wrong.
This is wrong. It didn't work for me. I was disappointed by it.
Yeah, to the contrary, let me give you doom. Yeah.
I'm like, defend this, please. Because I'd like to see somebody say, oh, it's really good because, and convince me, but that's a hard sell.
No, I felt that too. I literally, at the end, I'm like, what are we doing? That was my last thing I read on here, like, which tells you where I was, where my headspace was when I was reading this. It's confusing the way what he did.
Yeah, yeah. Move over to the other publishers.
Yeah, let's do that. Flipping over. Okay, this one we should be pretty close to. I had 19.
I had 18.
Man, we're one off in everything. This is an awesome month, John.
All right, what do you want to start with?
All right, I'm starting. Okay, I am going to start with, gosh, the things I liked, you definitely did not get, but I'll have to talk about them. Okay, I will go with Rook Exodus number 2. I will say, of the Geigerverse, Rook is my favorite of the series. I literally say this is my new favorite book. We get introduced to a new warden in here. The wardens are people that kind of wear helmets, and it gives them control of, like, different animals. You know, one guy, the Rook, it's a bird. He can talk to birds. You get meet Direwolf, controls the wolves that are on the planet. And there's some dynamics between the two, which I really did enjoy. And there has been a loss of one warden on the planet from a previous issue. I don't want to ruin it, but you won't know. Spoiler alert, it is a guy named Swine who controlled, you know, the swine, basically the pigs. And we get a reveal into the characters acting as a warden, but they're not supposed to be a warden. Somebody who's learned to take control of these helmets, and they are able to manipulate things on the planet. People are running. There's mass chaos on here. Rook wants to leave the planet. The girl, the direwolf character, does not want to leave. And then we're building up towards a showdown. Just a ton of world building going on here, but action with the world building and so much sci-fi and also dystopia in all the right ways.
Cool.
Yeah, I love this title. All right, over to you, John.
I'm going to start with the indie book that worked the best for me this month, and that was Space Ghost number 1.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think of that?
I really enjoyed it. It was a great origin of how Jan and Jace meet Space Ghost.
Awesome.
So we get to see Space Ghost in action. We don't really get to know them too much at this point, but we get their backstory and get them fleshed out and kind of why they deserve, kind of, for lack of a better term, to become his sidekicks and such. It was some solid art, good story. It was really everything I was hoping it would be. So, a ton of fun.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like it'd be fun. And I love the character. There's some nostalgia there. Did it make you feel nostalgic?
Yeah, I'm not going to say I was a huge Space Ghost fan back in the day or whatnot, but I've read enough comics and stuff that when he's done well, it pushes the right buttons for me.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, that's awesome. Over to me?
Yeah.
All right. And keeping on my trend of things that I like in the Geigerverse, Geiger number 2 was my second favorite book. And I did pick up the deluxe hardcover of the first, I think it was 6 or 8 issues, but I think it was 6 of Geiger. That's how much I enjoy it that I picked up the hardcover of the first run. And Geiger is, this Geiger is much more empathetic than what the first thing I read, the first volume that came out. We get some foreshadowing with Geiger and his knight friend, Tagalog friend, while they're hunting some boar or javelina, whatever they are, because they're in the West, I'm assuming they're javelina. And they're looking for clean meat, you know, something that's not irradiated. And we get some bonding between the two characters and characterization moments. And then we move to a town. And they're looking for some information. Nobody wants to disseminate. They want to trade to disseminate information. So that's kind of the setup there. And we get to a point where Geiger and the knight look for a guy who's been bombing and pillaging the town. So the town says, hey, if you help us out, this guy's been bombing and pillaging, we'll give you this information you need. And they go in pursuit, and a similar story starts playing out that we've seen. And I'm really liking the way that it was set up, and it's not what I expected, and I was surprised. I'm just going to leave it there because I don't want to spoil too many things, but I think people who have read other Geigerverse titles will be very happy with the end of this book. And I'm looking at Chris Myers when I say that, because there's something that he read and he really enjoyed from the Geigerverse that reappears at the end of Geiger 2.
Cool.
And that's strictly Chris Myers, because he really liked that thing. I'll just say that, and I don't want to spoil it for him.
Cool, cool. All right. For me, I think what I'm going to talk about next is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers The Return number 4.
Very cool.
This lands the ending. I think they did a really good job building up their own kind of take on the future. It's different than like the 30th anniversary TV special we got or Netflix special we got, but it rang true to the characters in a similar way. It was a ton of fun. They went in a few interesting directions. What I found most intriguing was they really could have stopped this story a page sooner just by moving one caption to the previous page and ending on a nice little moment, but they didn't. They end on a reveal that implies there might be a sequel to this story coming.
Oh, very cool.
And it definitely is a, I'm curious where they would go with that. So, ton of fun. Amy Jo Johnson, the original Pink Ranger, co-wrote this, did a fine job on it. So I was very happy with that.
Very nice.
And I'm really curious where Boom is going to go with the Power Ranger franchise in comics, because I had just gotten word shortly before we recorded that the reboot reimagining project they were doing for the TV show with Netflix has kind of fallen through. Hasbro's looking for another partner and stuff like that on that. So we're at a point where TV-wise, it may well be that Power Rangers is not just pausing, but over.
Oh, wow.
And there's some definitely behind-the-scenes stuff I'd heard about that implied decisions were made by some people at Hasbro without talking to other people at Hasbro in terms of, like, acquiring Power Rangers, acquiring E1, which I think they've since divested themselves of, and not really having a game plan from the get-go as to how to use the property, etc. I mean, obviously, they've done great with it for the duration they've had it, but now they're at this point where they're trying to reboot it, reimagine it, retool it, whatever, and it seems to be floundering pretty severely.
That's not good.
Now, if I were them, keeping it going in comics is a low-risk venture. Boom's doing really good with the franchise. Let them keep going with it. That can at least keep it out there and active while you're trying to figure out what to do big picture-wise.
You know, to your point on that, we both really enjoyed the Orville comics when the Orville TV show wasn't around.
Yep.
And I wish they would revisit the property again because they were doing a good enough job in there that it felt like I was still enjoying the show even though the show was gone forever.
Yeah, yeah. It rang true to the series.
It really did. The voices, the way the characters acted. So it's unfortunate that they don't deliver more of that, but if Mighty Morphins goes down that path, I hope they do the comics for you.
I hope they do them well, because there's a one-shot they've had in the last solicitation of Power Rangers Infinite or Infinity or something like that, and it looked like it was going to be a parody of Power Rangers versus Power Rangers. So I'm like, I'm not getting that. But again, they're doing a good job both with the Power Rangers The Return that ended and the main Power Ranger title itself. I'm not sure how many more issues it's got. It may just have another two, ending the whole Darkest Hour stuff. Actually, I think it'll go to at least 123, and 120 was the latest one. So I don't know that there'll be a 124.
Interesting. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, keep us posted.
Yeah, definitely interesting times for the franchise.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
It is.
All right. Well, over to me for my final pick, and I'm going to go with something that I could only pick this last time because it wrapped up. Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 15, by Jason Aaron over at Boom. And I felt like the last four issues of this title had stunk. They got really weird and bizarre. The first 10 were really good. And then I felt like he had a good ending here. So a strong ending to the series. Mezzi and Maceo have had ups and downs with their relationship and adventures throughout the wasteland. You know, sweet moments, decadent moments, really bad moments. And it's nice to reflect. That's what this issue was. It was reflecting on their lives and their adventures while they were facing an adversary and having to fight for one another one last time, let's say. And the couple was apart and they team up to fight and keep the other one safe. Is it enough? Y'all, we'll leave it at that. And I will say the book left me feeling happy at times, sad at times. And that's good because it has that emotional overtones that I felt like if you're looking for a dystopic book with some emotion and feeling in it, this is the book to read.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a good ending. Solid.
Awesome. All right, the next one I want to talk about is one that I am dropping.
Ah.
I think I've got one more issue on order. But what I wanted to talk about is actually the art.
Okay.
This is You and I.
Oh, yeah.
By Artists, Writers, and Artisans.
I canceled it, too.
Story is totally not working for me.
Yeah.
But as I was reading this, This issue actually worked better for me than some of the previous ones.
Yeah.
But there were one or two pages where Mike Choi's work on this just really was amazing. Because he's not just kind of the penciler. He's the artist.
Yeah.
There is no listed colorist, so I'm crediting the color work to him. And if not, I apologize for whoever I'm miscrediting at this point. What really stood out for me, and it was really, there's a page about six from the end where we've got the lead of, I guess it's, is it you or it's I? I guess it's you. He's leaping forward to go hit somebody or whatever. And it's fully 3D rendered and stuff like that. It really just pops off the page. But most of the page is done in a very, very flat art style, color-wise. And it's kind of, again, what he sees versus what's happening. And again, it just shows the power a colorist can have on a page by, do they do a flat style? Do they really render it and give that sense of depth to it? And Mike Choi just did a great job on a couple of these pages switching between those two styles. Again, the story is not working for me, but some of the art, I mean, there's a couple of pages that I think are great examples of, like I said, the influence color can have on a comic.
That's awesome. You know what's funny is I agree with you wholeheartedly because the art was the star of the comic. The story kind of went awry there at points. And it's unfortunate because this, I feel like the world of the, what are they called?
The Resistance.
Resistance, yeah. The Resistance universe. It's a fully realized world. It's fun. We used to get titles periodically here and there. Straczynski kind of went away from it. And now he finally came back. And I feel like he left us story-wise with a little bit of a dud.
He gets a little, I'm trying to think of a polite way to phrase this. I'm going to go with, and I don't mean any offense to him, a little full of himself.
Yeah, he does.
He gets a little highfalutin and stuff like that. And I think he's written some brilliant stories. I think the original Babylon 5 TV series is terrific. He's written some very good comics. There are others where he's just trying to show how smart he is or whatever, which is more than a little off-putting. This story didn't work for me. The original Resistance stuff had unfortunate timing because it's about a world that people get powers because of a pandemic, and it happened right as we started our real pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ironic.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. I'd really like to see Straczynski go back to the telepath stuff he did for a miniseries that implied there would be more miniseries to come.
Yeah, he had several good books in there that were just fantastic, and I really liked the world he had built, and it just, it's unfortunate because we just don't get much from it. It's almost like he moved on. I think he's doing Captain America now, I think.
He is.
And I don't know what else he's doing, but...
Have you been reading Captain America?
It's not very good.
Well, it reads like Straczynski being Straczynski and not in the best of ways.
No!
I mean, it's part of this long saga that doesn't feel like it needs or should be a Captain America saga.
Yeah. It started off okay and it kind of devolved from there. I feel like you said, he almost gets lost in his own writing at times, it feels like.
I think so. I think he's one that, I don't know if it's an editor he needs. He needs something to ground the work to where it doesn't become a little self-indulgent.
Yeah, that's a perfect way of putting it. Yeah, the editor to keep him grounded, to not go on these platitudes and whatever he's doing at the time.
He's an absolutely brilliant writer. I think he just needs to be focused on something that will work better for the audience.
Yeah, because he had some really magical moments with this Resistance world. Even Moths. Remember Moths?
Moths was good, but then some of the other miniseries they did by other creators
were not that good.
Were not that good, and it diluted the universe.
Yeah, it really did. So it's unfortunate. Once again, I feel like you're going to be reading about this in the Overstreet Dead Universe thing in the future.
Probably.
Remember how that came out with that thing?
They're doing a second volume.
Oh, God. Oh, this will be in there one day.
There's room for a couple of more volumes.
Oh, good Lord. I was joking and it's coming to light.
I think somebody should do a soon-to-be-dead universes.
Oh, what an idea. Oh, yeah. Remember Humanoids had one, too?
Humanoids, yeah. And some of those were good.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
But you look back at the 80s when every black and white publisher under the sun was trying to spin out a superhero color universe.
Yeah, everyone did it.
And some stuck around for a little bit. Some lasted a year or two. Some lasted an issue or two. One or two lasted an ash can or two.
Which is just insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember going to Comic-Con one year, and there was one publisher, I forget what they were called, They had a decent size booth, you know, a 2-booth by 2-booth square thing, total of 4 booths, which for a publisher I hadn't heard about is big. And it literally had like a canopy above it, all that kind of stuff. I talked to them. They had plans. They had some interesting stuff. And again, this is when everybody was universe building. And they had some ash cans they gave away. I think an issue came out and then poof, it's as if they'd been wiped from the timeline.
Wow. That's sad.
Just insane.
Yeah. And it happens again and again.
Which is a good thing. I like it when people have enough enthusiasm and optimism about the industry to put something out there and see if it works.
Some people are willing to take a little more risk than I am.
Yes. I think comics is a good way to make a million, provided you start with 100 million or something. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you'll make a million if you walk in with 10 times that amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Great way to lose money.
Oh, by the way, I know we're done with our picks now, but one thing I was going to tell you, Void Rivals, which was kind of like the book that I'm reading in that whole...
Energon universe.
Energon, yeah. Skybound thing. And it's the best of the bunch for me just because I didn't know that. I thought it was the Enemy Mind story. But they, once again, they're getting Transformer-y. I'm like, get that stuff out of here. Because when you lose the license one day, and yes, you will lose the license. It could be 10 years from now. It could be 20 years from now. You've now created a property that you can't reprint, which is whatever. I got the issues.
Does Kirkman care about that?
Probably not. But at the same time, I feel like the Transformers aspect of this makes the story worse, because when he's not dealing with Transformers, the book is good. And when the Transformers come in, I'm like, I get irritated with it.
Is he doing it in a way where he could reprint the book minus those pages and still make sense?
Probably not. He did at the beginning. He could have left out a page. He could have said it was something else because it wasn't explicitly said this is a Transformer. But now he's delving into the realm where now there'll have to be books missing or half a book missing. And that's unfortunate because eventually that happens. You lose the license, and now this stuff goes into the unreprintable,
yep.
Unless you want to pay up some money, and who knows if that will ever happen.
Or maybe he could still reprint it as long as it's not cover featured?
Maybe. Who knows what kind of deal he signed? You know, maybe I can just reprint my Void Rivals, but not these, your G.I. Joe or Transformer books. Who knows?
Yeah. Don't know. Curious.
Yeah. Who knows? So overall, I would say I was surprised that I got so little because these are the summer months. And usually the summer months are the bigger event shipping months. So this is May is the beginning of, for me, the summer, even though summer starts in June. So I was surprised it was this small, but I'll see. I'm kind of dabbling next month in the coming months with the new X titles coming out, but I don't think I'll stick with a ton of them. I think I'll see which ones I like and stick with those two or three or however many it is.
I think for me, what made it a bigger month was that fifth week.
Oh, yeah. That happens too.
Because I'm throttling back some. They're ending certain books and whatnot, so that's some of it. And some things are working better for me than others. I'm focusing on what's working better for me.
That's a good thing to do.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention to people, I did mention it on the Slack channel. It really only impacts people who are on the Slack channel. But I got an email from Slack. They are changing their policy for free workspaces. And guess what? Because I have got a zero budget for this podcast, even though I'm shelling out for hosting and many other things, I've got a free workspace in Slack because I'm not going to pay for it. If I were to pay something additional for the podcast, before I would do it on something like that, it would be editing. But, you know, anyways. As a free workspace, we can only see 90 days of content on Slack. The older stuff is saved, but it would only be accessible if I paid for a plan. The change they're making in their policy is that content older than 1 year for free plans will get deleted starting near the end of August.
So it's just going to be gone forever into the abyss.
Gone forever into the abyss. I don't think it really impacts us. It's not like we'd have been able to see it for the last 9 months of it anyways. But it does mean if I were to ever win the lottery and upgrade to a paid plan for Slack, we wouldn't have the full history of the Slack conversation. Unless, of course, I win that lottery in the next 2 months.
The forums is a better place for that.
Yep. I was going to remind people we've still got the forums. It's a good place for things that have a longer lifespan than just the discussion in the moment and whatnot. And we had a really good discussion as we record this yesterday, which would have been June 24th, on continuity and accessibility and some stuff like that. I mean, it's the same sort of discussion, honestly, we've had every couple of years.
Yeah, I just felt like striking up a conversation just to play devil's advocate and just generate some conversation sometimes, just for fun. And honestly, I'm so happy that Sam chimed in and you did, because like, I wish more people would have, but like, it's kind of fun to just go back and forth and spitball and why are things the way they are? And we had a ton of fun with that. It was cool.
Yeah, great conversation. Sam had some really good points, really cut to the heart of the matter in a few places.
I love Sam. I respect that guy. He's very sharp.
Yeah, very smart guy. Very smart guy. And well-read, too.
Yeah.
But again, 90 days from now, we won't be able to see that conversation. A year from now, it will be forever gone.
It's true. Hey, copy and paste that into the forum right now.
somebody probably could or should.
Yeah.
Because again, we've got the forum history going back to when the podcast started in 2007.
You know, I should just copy and paste our lively debate and be like, chime in here if you have any comments on the forums.
Yeah, because particularly with something like continuity and accessibility, that issue comes up time and time again.
Yeah. And every now and then it's fun to just hash it out and have fun.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.